Welcome, everyone, to the Screamcast. I am your host, Sean DeRager, and the person making all the noise right now is Brad Henderson. What's up, man?
How did I make any noise?
I just heard a big scrape.
Oh, sorry.
It's all good.
Sorry.
What's up, man? What's up, man? Back from Austin.
What number are we on?
54.
54. All right, I'm quitting at 55. Oh, what was that?
I'm mixing up a Kraken and Coke Zero right now.
That's like your jam.
Kraken Black Spiced Rum. This show brought to you by Kraken Black Spiced Rum. Ah, refreshing.
Yeah.
And Coke Zero. But seriously though, we didn't really mention on the last episode, but we do have a full-on sponsor now, or partner. I think it's more of a partnership. But we've jumped into bed. You got some free coffee, sucker. We jumped into bed with Coffee Shop of Horrors, and I couldn't be happier because I love their coffee, and any chance for me to kind of spread the word, it's fun. So we will be doing a drawing at the end of the show for some free coffee. So thanks to all of you who participated. I'll be grabbing a name out of a hat and picking a winner. So
like literally.
Literally, I took a picture and posted it on Twitter. Yeah, man. So anyway, check them out. Coffee Shop of Horrors. What was that?
They're gonna know if they want him before they listen to the show.
Nope, because we will not. I'm not gonna post any pictures or anything. They're gonna hear it on the show first. So up till now, they've been waiting in suspense.
Or they just forgot about it.
Or they forgot about it. And they'll hear it like in a few weeks when they get caught up on the show.
Sounds about right.
Anyway, if you won, we will definitely be in touch with you for sure. So you won't be, just wondering. Anyway, we got a packed show today, man. We're going to be talking Wolf Cop, and we're going to be talking Late Phases. So we got some werewolf action to talk about. And what I like is you couldn't have get like two more different films to talk about, I think.
Really?
So.
All right.
Yes, one's a friggin' werewolf comedy, and the other is like a straight up horror flick. You know?
If you say so.
Oh my gosh. This is how this episode's gonna go.
No, this episode's gonna go great.
All right.
I'm gonna have a fucking fantastic time.
All right, well, here we go. Let's, before we jump into anything else, though, let's jump into some Blu-ray announcements.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Bom, bom, bom. Mm-hmm. All right, so The Beyond is out from Grindhouse Releasing, I think.
Are we sure?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on.
I haven't got my email. We're supposed to talk about this on our next show, and I haven't got the email on it shipping yet.
So hopefully that happens. I personally, I don't really care. I have the other thing.
Yeah, but do you know what's holding that whole thing up? Is there
that glow-in-the-dark
case? Goddamn glow-in-the-dark slipcase.
This is why you just buy the Arrow bullshit, and you're done with it. For limited edition copies through Screen Archives, exclusive, you can get Scorpion Releasing's A Candle for the Devil and Stripped to Kill. Those should be here tomorrow, but of course,
Screen
Archives, they don't give you confirmations or any bullshit.
No, they give confirmations. They give confirmations.
I didn't get shit.
Really?
Yeah, no, I didn't get anything. I don't have anything that's a tracking number on those or whatever. Arrow also has Blind Woman's Curse, which is their second. Is that their second Blu-ray of their U.S.?
Yeah, Mark of the Devil was first, and then Blind Woman's Curse is their second. We're going to have to do a show on those two, by the way. Mental note. Cause that was,
maybe.
Maybe. We got to talk about those.
No. Cool. Which also, it's Miko Kaji, I think is how you say her name. Anyways, she's in Blind Woman's Curse. There's movies that are better than Blind Woman's Curse, like she, Lady Snowblood,
yes,
and like Stray Cat Rock and stuff like that. She was she's pretty active for a while in cinema, and then she just kind of dropped off the face of the earth. It's kind of weird, but yeah, I would definitely check out the movie. The movie's all right. I like her other stuff better. And Adam Green's Digging Up the Marrow, if you want to say it that way, but I believe it's Marrow, which I still haven't seen. Like, I'm still, like, pushing that off a little bit. It was mostly because I just heard terrible, terrible things about it. And I like Adam Green because he's a badass, like, with horror and, you know, Holliston, but I don't really care for any of his movies. But I'm going to really give Digging Up the Marrow a full chance because it sounds fucking awesome. Yeah. It really does.
Mine should be arriving today in the mail.
So. Yeah. I mean, I liked Hatchet for what it's worth. I mean, it's not like I fucking hate his movies. I love the idea of Hatchet.
Mm-hmm.
Hatchet 2 was a lot better. And Hatchet 3 was just, you know, whatever. He didn't direct Hatchet 3. I think somebody else did. He just wrote it.
Yeah, he wrote
it. Honestly, I think Frozen is his best film.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Disney picked it up.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping after Frozen came out that he would go more that direction, and he really hasn't. Like, he hasn't had anything that rivals Frozen at all. And that,
I mean, maybe he'll cut a deal with Disney with Frozen too. I don't know.
Man, that'd be amazing.
and then also the new Monster High movie is out.
Oh, okay.
I have to mention that because Will is apeshit over Monster High. So, but anyways, that's it.
Cool.
for horror. Last I heard, I'm still trying to find confirmation on this, but A Sure Thing was released by Shout Factory. And yes. Man, Pride, and Vengeance by Blue Underground. But I'm still, like, having trouble finding out if those are actually out and not just listed. I don't know. But anyways, A Sure Thing has been – I've been wanting that on Blu-ray for a while. So I'm happy that's coming out or is out tomorrow. We'll see. I think I pre-ordered it, so
– We'll see, man. Yeah, good old John Cusack, man. In his prime.
Yeah.
I love – 80s John Cusack. It's my favorite.
You like John Cusack?
I do, man.
What?
High Fidelity, man. High Fidelity got me through some rough stuff. I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's my least favorite John Cusack movie, other than Runaway Jury.
This is getting personal here.
Kidding.
High Fidelity and Swingers got me through a really bad breakup. Just saying, movies can do wonders.
Have you watched? We actually had a conversation with this recently with some friends, with our fellow Andrew Davis expert. We were talking about that when we were at South by Southwest, that if you rewatch Swingers and Maid, they're not as good because of what Vince Vaughn has done to himself.
Right? Yeah, I can see that. I, you know, what?
Not rewatchable anymore. I mean, they're still okay, but Maid is just. I rewatched Maid last year or something, and I was like, God damn.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think that would happen, really. You wouldn't think that an actor would ruin his past movies because of what he's done. But you realize that he's just that character all the time. So that there's no originality or being special anymore because you get to see that in everything he's ever done.
Yeah, he's a one-trick pony.
Yeah, so
except in The Cell, where he's just boring, and the set design's really great, and costumes.
Yeah. Okay.
That it? We good?
Yeah, we're good. We can talk about South By.
Let's talk about South By Southwest. We had some really great feedback on last week's show, so thanks to all of you who threw a bone our way and really dug
Boner.
It. Yeah. I re-listened to it, because a lot of times I try to listen to these episodes, but I don't really get a chance to sometimes. And I re-listened to last week's, and I really liked it. Like, I thought you had a lot of good insights into the festival. So there were certain things you were still going to be checking out. So let's have a bit of a rundown, man.
I'll give you a rundown. How about if I give you a rundown while I give you a rundown? Well, honestly, I kind of forget, since that was so rushed. And kind of get out of here, Beasley. Since it was kind of like so rushed, I kind of forget what I mentioned when I talked about. So if I repeat any, I am sorry. So if you remember any that I spoke about, stop me. Done. I know I talked about the Corpse of Anna Fritz and Deathgasm. Did I talk about the Diabolical?
You said you were going to be watching it.
Oh, that night. I did not like the Diabolical. Moving on. the Diabolical looks good, and like Ali Larter is in it, but it's just like it got distribution, so I can, you know, say my piece because it's, you know, Accelerator Media picked it up. But it's just really bland. Like, they actually have kind of a cool concept for the most part, but once they kind of like the movie's okay until you know the concept. But the concept is cool. It just doesn't work for the movie. it's like two shots to the nuts.
Wow.
So yeah,
but anyways, I literally know exactly.
You literally get that right.
What you're talking about.
Yeah.
I just had a vasectomy over the weekend, people.
Another one.
Not a good way to spend your weekend.
Dude, don't talk about that stuff. It's gonna make my balls hurt. Another one that I watched that was okay. It was called Excess Flesh. It was basically a kind of a bigger girl is obsessed with her beautiful roommate.
Oh, I've heard about this one.
Yeah, so she captures her, and it's just a total like puke and like eating fest. Oh, it's a really, really gross and slimy movie.
It's a perfect movie for to order yourself a nice steak or something. And
dude, I ate pizza during the movie. But that kind of stuff doesn't bother me. But I was like, damn, like people are going to be feeling queasy. So, yeah, it was okay. It wasn't like terrible or anything. But that might be coming out. Another one that I actually really enjoyed for what it was worth. It got shit on at the festival, which I didn't think was fair because. Adam Mason is the director of this movie. Adam Mason directed two really badass movies called The Devil's Chair and Blood River, which I highly suggest checking out. But he has a new movie, a found footage movie called Hangman. And Hangman kind of got shit on a lot. And I didn't think it was fair because they really had kind of a cool concept. And they kind of try to do something a little new with found footage. And I enjoyed it for what it was worth. It's basically a guy who sets up hidden cameras in people's houses, and he becomes obsessed with them and stalks them while he's in the house. So it's very – like the thing that works for this found footage concept is that it's just very creepy and doesn't really have to do much just because it seems so real. Hmm. Like if somebody was actually in your house – what would they do? It's not like a fuck ton of terrorizing. It's more or less just fucking with you. And I found that more creepy than I do like somebody that's chasing somebody around with a video camera.
Right.
Like it just worked on a level. There's a couple things that didn't work, but for the most part, it's, you know, it's well made. It has, you know, Amy Smart's in it, Jeremy Sisto. It's got a pretty cool cast, even though Amy Smart's in it for like 2 seconds. But
for shame,
it works, huh?
I said for shame, you don't keep Amy Smart in a movie for 2 seconds.
You barely don't. You would actually have to look at the credits to know it's her. it's bizarre. I also think Sarah Butler's in the beginning of it. Another thing that was cool is that there's a song. In the film, it was called My Moon, and the artist is Antonia. Its last name is Maiovvi.
Maiovvi.
Yeah, Maiovvi. I guess you would. I think that's a cool way to say his last name. I don't know if that's it, but you know, he has this really badass song that the killer plays throughout the film, and it really got under my skin because it's kind of a it's kind of like a dream wave song, but it's really like haunting. It fits perfect for the killer. It's very like bassy and everything. And I actually contacted the musician, because I was like, dude, where is this song? And he's like, you know, he's like, I pulled it off the internet for right now. I'm, you know, remastering everything for vinyl. So I just went to Spotify and looked up his shit. Fucking awesome. Cool. Like, take, like, Goblin, Carpenter, like, all that, like, giallo music and Dreamwave stuff and mix it together, and that's what he sounds like.
What's his name? I'm going to write this down and put this in the show notes.
A-N-T-O-N-I, like Antoni.
Okay.
Antoni. M-A-I-O-V-V-I.
M-A-I-V-V-I?
Now, see, why are we looking? Oh, God. Leave this in the show so people know that we don't plan our shit.
Honestly, I think, you know, podcasts are
all right, here we go.
Not
it's
be
M-A-I-O-V-V-I.
M-A-I-O-V-V-I.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, he has a couple albums on there, a couple EPs, but it's just really good. Like, the guy needs to score a fucking movie is what I'm trying to say.
Cool.
So, yeah, definitely check out Hangman. Hopefully it gets distribution. I think it will, since it's found footage, because that's one of the easiest things, just to throw up on the Netflix or, you know, put on a DVD or whatever.
It'll be on DVD at Best Buy for $8.99.
Yeah. And the other one, man, this was in one of my top ones for South By, and I wasn't expecting it. Henry Rollins is in it. He executive produced. I love Henry Rollins, but I can't look at Henry Rollins as a lead in a movie. But he played in this movie. It's called He Never Died, and it's a horror film. And Henry Rollins plays the lead, and it's a film noir, modern-day horror film.
Huh.
It's fucking crazy, and it's hilarious and super bloody, and it's just perfect. Like, he nails this character so well. For anybody that's a cinephile with film noir films, they know about The Long Goodbye with Elliot Gould. Basically, if The Long Goodbye was a horror film, this is exactly what it would be like.
Nice.
So it's just crazy, man. And I was in tears for a part of the movie, because I was laughing so hard, because Henry Rollins is perfect in this movie. He's absolutely perfect. I don't know if anybody could else pull that off, just because he's so big and kind of so menacing looking.
Yeah.
That when he speaks and he tells his stories, they just come across as like, he's like a teddy bear at times.
Yeah.
He's also extremely violent. So there's another story behind it, but I'm like anti-spoiler, so I'm not going to tell you exactly what's going on with the kind of the plot. If you read the synopsis, you're going to know what's going on. I just don't want to, you know, I don't like to do that.
When I heard about this, I heard Henry Rollins starring in a noir action horror flick or whatever, and I was like, I'm done. And it, you know, the title's great.
The thing is, even when it starts, it feels like I'm watching a direct-to-video 90s movie, like how the credits, like almost like a made-for-TV movie.
Uh-huh.
Like when the credits start to pop up, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, why does it look like that? It looks just so cheap. But it picks up, man. It's nonstop, like from beginning to end, just awesome.
Cool.
Like, it was one of the very few films that I was highly entertained from the beginning to end. Another film I saw was Pod. It's very, very, like, lo-fi, like, not, like, crazy or anything. It's just about a brother who locks himself at the family cabin, and his brother and sister go on a road trip to go get him, but he says that there's something out in the woods, and he has it trapped in the basement. So the film basically starts being crazy, and the credits are amazing, by the way. Like, it's they have the opening sequence to the movie, but when the credits start, the credits last like 10 seconds because they go by so fast, and there's just loud screaming and music. And like, you're like, nice. It's a total wake-up call. You're like, holy fuck, what just happened? But the movie, like, it's got some great effects. It's a really, like, good film for what it's worth. I was a little upset that they didn't make it more character development in it, because it's very talky for a good portion of it. Because, you know, you're trying to find out what's going on is this dude crazy, you know, all that kind of sort of thing. But they didn't really dive into that too much. It was a little upsetting. But still, you know, it is what it is. Still a good film. And then I saw Turbo Kid, which it was perfect. Because, you know, we had our apocalyptic Italian knockoff movies, and that's exactly what this thing is. Except it's a Canadian, or New Zealand, I guess. I don't know.
that's a big stretch, man.
Well, Canada, you know, it's a collaboration between Canada and New Zealand. I think the filmmakers are from New Zealand, and Jason Eisner and all them.
Okay, right.
Yeah, I don't know. I just remember them talking about it. It's a Canadian-New Zealand collaboration thing. But anyways, it's exactly what it is. It's, you know, take your favorite kids movie and put some blood in it. That's kind of exactly what it's like. It very much feels like a kids movie, aside from the amount of gore that it has. But, it's a decent little throwback film. It, kind of exactly what you would think it would be.
Cool. I heard some good things about it, so I'm looking forward to eventually checking it out.
Yeah, I think I talked about Night Owls and
you,
one
you know
and
what
two.
You didn't you, what you didn't talk about was Unfriended.
Ooh.
And you texted me the next day. You're like, oh shit, I forgot to talk about Unfriended.
Yeah, Unfriended's okay. Moving along.
shit, Unfriended.
No, Unfriended's. I really liked Unfriended. I suggest that people go to the theater and see it to support independent horror that's actually getting to your theater. Because, Blumhouse is putting out these low-budget films in theaters, which is awesome, you know. They might not be the greatest movies ever, but you're still getting independent horror in the theater.
I think I've enjoyed, for the most part, at least most of what Blumhouse has put out, you know, and I think people are expecting more than what they're
giving.
Yeah,
you're not
going
to go see anything crazy or anything you would say would
be. But they're all well acted and well shot.
Yeah, they're all decent movies. Yeah. Unfriended, I thought the thing is, I think the public eye is going to watch Unfriended and consider it boring. That's my thinking. Unfriended is 100% people sitting at their computers. It's through Skype.
Wow.
And it's five kids that are withholding a story and a secret that unfolds, and it's the movie's in real time, which I really liked, which I think it worked perfectly for the film. And it also doesn't do a lot to the point of the kids actually are sitting at their computers the entire time. It's not like, you know, there's a film
It doesn't go into open windows territory.
Yeah, like open windows, they were fucking going around the city with their laptops popped up, moving around. I'm like, that's bullshit. No one's going to do that. The Den did the exact same thing. The Den's a decent movie, but in The Den, it's over a period of time, and they're like, they take their laptop wherever they go.
Yeah.
Like, close your fucking laptop. When's the battery going to die? You know, questions for found footage movies pops up. Open Windows was in real time, but they took the computer wherever they went. But Unfriended,
that makes sense.
It's real time at people's, you know, in people's bedroom. And I like what they did with the movie because they didn't do a lot, but man, it's fucking creepy. Like it, and they nailed teenagers, man. They did the perfect like lingo, like typing, because you get to see everything they type back to each other because they do like instant messenger on there.
Huh.
They just nail everything. I mean, it's a perfect representation of teenagers of today, and it's a decent movie, and it's scary at times. And there's not the best part is not a whole lot's going on, you know. And it really really worked. It really did. And I was very, very happy with it. Now, I saw an unfinished cut, so I don't know what's going to change so much. But there was one moment in the film where it almost loses you. It almost lost me. But then it, you know, eventually corrected itself. And they're like, oh, well, this is kind of dumb. Let's not do this. So there is that. There is a film called Krisha. Krisha, I guess, is how they say it. But it's a drama. But it is a very fascinating movie. It's so well shot. The best way to describe it is that if you're holding a stick of dynamite in your hand and you don't know when it's going to blow up, that's kind of the feeling of this movie. But it was funny because I heard through the grapevine that the guys that made the film, like, used horror films kind of to mold the film in a way, like how to shoot it, the setup, the sound, the like the cinematography, the music. All that is from origins of horror films, but it's not a horror film in whatsoever. And it's very interesting to watch because with that in your head, you kind of pick apart a little bit. I think I would have got it halfway in because it, like, it almost feels like you're watching a horror film, but you're not. You're watching a drama. But that was pretty good. And then Raiders, I want to talk about for a second.
Raiders of Atlantis?
No.
Holy
fuck. Okay. You're such a douchebag. But yes, Raiders of Atlantis is directed by Diodato. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
No, I'm just kidding. But anyways, Raiders is a documentary. If people don't know, which I've heard about the kids, there's a group of kids in the 80s that got together for over an eight-year period and did their own remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, wow.
And they were, you know, they did it just in their basement, at their house, but they did a shot-for-shot remake for Raiders of the Lost Ark. And until like 2 years ago, there was one scene that was missing out of the movie, and that was I actually just watched, I know this sounds weird, for the first time today I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Holy shit, what?
Yeah, yeah. So, but then the movie inspired me to watch it because I was like, you know, I've seen bits and pieces of it. I'm going to go ahead and watch the whole film.
So what did you think of Raiders of the Lost Ark? Awesome, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a great movie.
I mean, fucking
great
badass.
Movie. I loved it. I wish I would have watched it as a kid because they don't make – what I was going to say is I actually said this on Twitter tonight. They don't make action adventure movies like that anymore.
No.
It's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
You know? But anyways, these kids set out for they filmed this movie over 8 year period of them. They grow up in the movie. They're like different ages. Like one scene, they'll be like 8, and the next scene, they'll be 15. You know. But anyways, the guys made a documentary about how this came about, and in just last year, they filmed that final scene that they were missing, and now they're in their 40s. So,
what was the scene that was missing?
It was the airplane sequence when Harrison Ford fights on the airplane and the airplane blows up.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
On the ground with the bald guy?
Yeah.
Wow, really? That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was the one scene that didn't – so they did a Kickstarter. I remember the Kickstarter from last year to get the funding for some of it, and they got funding for it to film it. So they got back together. They actually hired the cinematographer off Raiders of the Lost Ark. In order to film it. So, like, they pieced it all together. So they jumped from 8 to 15 to 8 to, like, 10 to 40 and then 10 again.
That's incredible.
But anyways, they stuck with it. And it's just an amazing documentary to show you that these kids did not give up. I can't imagine filming something over for an 8-year period and not abandoning the project. Because I see that it would be fun for, like, a summer project or something, or 2 summers. But 8 years... putting all your time, your friends, all this effort into it. And even after you go back and you're so – like the documentary is amazing because it documents – it's like linear of this – three parallel stories of them filming the film. And then also it goes through their history of filming. And it also just – intertwines the footage and outtakes and the problems in their personal life on another one. So there's three separate stories that are running at the same time, but it's edited so well that you don't know that. You don't realize you're watching three different stories until you like actually think about it. But it's a great documentary. They're trying to get that out with the actual, you can find bootleg copies of, the Raiders of Lost Ark adaptation with the kids online because it's been out for a while. I've actually never watched it mainly because I never saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. I always just knew about it. I mean, it's a bunch of fucking kids doing shit. So it's basically just amazing to watch them. Like, oh my God, how are they going to do that? And watching the film tonight, I actually want to go back and watch this just to see like how they did certain things. But it's a great documentary. Definitely something to check out. So I think that's it for the South by Southwest rundown.
It sounds like you had a blast, dude.
Yeah, it was great. I don't ever want to miss that festival. Because it was my first time going, but I definitely don't want it to be my last time because I had a lot of fun, saw a lot of cool movies, hung out with a lot of cool people. Yeah, it was just, it was a great experience.
Very nice. Someday I'll be able to go to South by Southwest and Fantastic Fest. I will.
Well, dude, if you stop buying Studio Ghiblets and
speaking of Studio Ghiblets, Spirited Away finally is coming to Blu-ray, people. Finally. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
All right, man. Dude, let's jump into some Wolf Cop.
Is it almost time?
A face. It kind of looks like you.
Ooh, got to stop over at the brewery. Do some investigating.
Did you think of myself when I'm the wolf?
Recently, you did seem like freakishly strong. You had those claws and those teeth. Plus, you know, you were drunk, so I knew it was you.
Hello? Hello?
Am I? Big teeth you have. That's not all.
Okay.
Let's just say that ever since I saw the poster of Wolf Cop, the hand-drawn, hand-painted one. I was like, what the fuck is this movie? And I mean, it's probably been about 2 years, I think, I've been waiting for Wolf Cop to come out because the setup is fantastic. I mean,
it's a great idea.
It's all there. He's a werewolf and he's a cop. I mean, especially if you come from the 80s generation, you grew up, you know, RoboCop. And, you know, then if you had a fascination with, werewolf movies, it's like the perfect combination. And I don't know. I've just been so excited to see this movie. And then I have finally seen it after all this time. It was $12.99 at Best Buy, which is a fantastic price. Let's just say for me, I had a ton of fun with Wolf Cop. I feel like
exactly.
No, it's one of those movies that I feel like a lot of people will crap on, and people won't get it or won't like it, won't like the execution of it. But for me, I had a blast with it. It had an old school feel to it. I liked that it kind of felt somewhat timeless, like it felt 80s-ish or whatever. You didn't know if it was in the U.S. or Canada or whatever. Because it was shot in Saskatchewan, but they're all wearing, like, American flag pins and stuff like that. I really dug the lead, Leo Fafard? What a great name. Leo Fafard. Who plays Lou Guru, who's the wolf cop. I liked him. So the setup basically is an alcoholic cop in this small, maybe border town near Canada or in Canada or wherever, basically through some sort of occult ritual, becomes a werewolf. And that's pretty much the setup for the flick. And, before we get any further talking about Wolf Cop and how it was funded and everything like that, cause I think there's a fun story in how it got made. Brad, what did you think about Wolf Cop?
I think it's a great concept, but I feel like the great concept was rushed. Like, it's one of those things where, like, when you for very first hear Wolf Cop, you just automatically, your hair raises up. But anyway, it's like, when I very first heard about it, I was like, oh, man, that just sounds like right up my alley. And, you know, it was kind of like the campaign they were talking about and just, you know, like the promotional stuff. It sounded like it was going to be a throwback from the 80s. It just felt right. But watching it, it looks super fucking cheap. And it's just, I don't know, it's such a bland execution to a cool idea. And the movie's not, I'm not going to go out and say the movie's bad. I don't think that. I just think this was just a poorly executed, a great idea that was poorly executed. Hmm. Nothing felt right about it. Like, you know, even the music wasn't great.
Yeah, I have issues with the music.
It just felt like, you know, like I won't, like, if the guys behind it were actually hardcore fans of stuff from the 80s, like, it just didn't rub off on the screen. It didn't have a throwback feel. It didn't feel, you said it felt timeless. I didn't feel it at all. Hmm. I felt like I was watching another direct-to-video horror film that I watch every, like, it felt like something I watch all the time. Like, nothing stood out about it. It will just get thrown in the pile of the stuff I've seen. And if you didn't bring it up, I wouldn't have never covered it on the show. I'm sorry if it feels like I'm shitting on the movie, but I'm not shitting on the movie whatsoever.
I mean, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like there's a lot of people that, you know,
love hate movie for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that look past the faults. And of course, you know, a movie like this, it was low budget. I'm not exactly sure how much the movie cost to make. I think they got about $1 million from Cinecoop to make the movie.
Jesus Christ. $1 million. I mean, the special effects. Like, the special effects are fantastic. Like, there's nothing wrong in that department.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like they, like, almost like if they were held back. The filmmakers were held back, right, and they were told what to do. Like, it didn't truly feel like a passion project, which kind of what it made it sound like at first. But it just felt like everything was being held back from this movie. It never went to where it was supposed to go or wanted to go. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the lead is great. You know, he does a really, really good job. Once that actual, like, transformation happens, and you think that he's not really, like, when he becomes Wolf Cop, it's not that big of a deal. You know, it's like he does so little as Wolf Cop,
right?
That it doesn't feel like they did enough with him. Yeah. And I think that might have been my main issue, because the actor was so good. But once he becomes Wolf Cop, he loses that feel. He's not charismatic anymore, even though he's an asshole. You still like the guy, you know, and you want to be with him, but you actually don't want to be with Wolf Cop anymore. You want him to transform back to his human self.
Yeah, because there's really, like the alcoholic cop. I mean, they don't beat around the bush showing that he's a freaking alcoholic. Yeah. And his wrestling with his kind of super new senses or whatever, dealing with that, like, there's a lot there. And I think you're right. Like for me, like, I look past all that. I had a lot of fun with the movie. It's 79 minutes. There's some fantastic gore in it. There's some great action. There's a few great action sequences in it. The director and writer, his name is Lowell Dean. And, you know, I listened to the commentary. We'll get more into this in a bit, but you're right. It does sound like there were.
His first film?
This is his first, I think he's done more, but nothing that anyone's seen.
This is his first feature, though.
I think this is his first. Well, he did a movie called 13 Eerie.
Oh, God.
Which got, I think that got some releasing, but that's the only other movie I've heard.
It has Catherine Isabel in it. That's another film that actually, like, that's the forensics movie. I remember that.
Okay.
It's such a fucking good setup. The execution's just poor. It's about, like, six, like, forensic people, like, training.
Huh, okay.
And they, like, go to, I think they go to, like, a train yard, and it turns out to be that there's fucking killers out there, so this forensic team has to fight back. Like, that gives me an instant boner. But the execution's just not there.
Huh.
You know, I remember watching that movie. And it wasn't forgettable, of course, because Catherine Isabel's in it. But, Yeah, I just like that was just one of those. It's the same instance where it's like a good idea. Maybe it's because it's independent. They had to rush through it. I don't know.
Well, that's what they said. Like they had more, almost more time to do the trailer because the money was raised.
Trailer's great.
Yeah. Well, the money was raised.
Promotional trailer.
Yeah. Here's what we're getting at. The money was raised through something called Cinecoop, and I'm not sure if this is a Canadian thing or what. I don't know. The only time I'd ever heard of Cinecoop was through, you know, Wolf Cop, because I'd started researching and what the hell is, you know, the poster, the title is great. Let me research this. And they basically, Cinecoop was a contest, kind of like, you know, you want to say like maybe an American Idol or something like that of, you know, a contest. So basically I don't think they had a script, but they had the idea, and it was, let's build up this idea and build up a marketing campaign. And through all the, and they had a bunch of challenges that they had to hit each month or something like that within a certain day period. And I think it all came down to, you know, the poster and the trailer and some end marketing materials. And then that's, if you had that and then everyone, you know, the people running Cinecoop voted. I don't know if it was audience or what, but they voted on it, and Wolf Cop ended up winning. They had a kick-ass trailer. They had a kick-ass poster. Everything was in line. And they almost had more time to work on the trailer than they did. Like, once they got the money, in the commentary, they say that they were just running and gunning. Like, they had $1 million, and they had to get this feature-length film done. And there's a whole lot of stuff that he came up with within the script, a lot of action beats, a lot of action scenes that they had to cut and kind of whittle down into this kind of more of a streamlined story. And that's where I feel like a lot of people who didn't just go with the movie and enjoy it for what it was, it does seem to kind of fizzle out towards the end. There's a few money scenes that are fantastic. The setup is great. There's, once he becomes Wolf Cop, or his transformation. Let's talk about his transformation.
Transformation looks great, but I think that before seems, you jump into that, talk about what you just said there.
Okay, well, but you know, we can talk about transformation a la Wolf Dick in a second. Well, that's incredible.
They never made the joke Wolf Cock. That kind of upset.
Oh man. Missed opportunity.
Well, I was going to say is that, you know, you mentioned about, like, what were your exact words about enjoying? You say enjoy it for what it's worth.
Enjoy for, you know, well, for what it is, man. Like,
I agree with that because I say that a lot. But in order for that to work, you have to have a long-standing, almost entirety of the film, at least where it's like, oh shit, that's what they're going to do. That's what they did. Uh-huh. Like, oh, I see what they were trying to do there. But there's just so many ups and downs to this that it loses you as soon as it becomes Wolf Cop. And actually it lost me during the transformation of the car.
Okay. Right. Yeah. It becomes comic.
And I'm like, oh shit. Like this is, oh, okay, here we go. He's going to have this car. And you don't see anything he fucking does aside from take off the door, spin the light around, and have a W in it.
Right. I mean, like I said, that's a budgetary restraint, man.
I understand that. But if it's a here's the thing: if it's a budgetary risk, and don't fucking do it. Like, if you can't complete it and it doesn't work, don't fucking do it. Like, don't have a 3-minute montage of getting a car ready. And then the final aspect is, you know, it's basically the same thing as if you're cooking. If you're 12 hours in the kitchen and your food tastes like shit, there's no point to go in the kitchen for 12 hours to make something. And that's exactly what that felt like. You're in there for 3 minutes while they do this montage. And then you don't actually, it's so fucking dark, you don't see the car. And what you do see are those three things and those three things only.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I get that there's budgetary reasons. I'm never going to crack on a movie for that. If there's potential there and they at least execute it well enough to, like, you know, go back to what I was talking about with Pod from South by. Pod does nothing new. Nothing new about it. But it's okay for what it's worth because at least from the beginning to the end, they keep you fully entertained. It might not go off the rails. It doesn't do anything new. But at least they kept it up. With Wolf Cop, like the whole opening, the sequence with him and him getting the transformation, and once he transforms, you're like, oh shit, I'm on board. But after that, it completely fizzles out. And it has a couple good moments throughout, but they lose you about 40 minutes in. They lose you in that movie. And that's how I felt. I'm not going to say Wolf Cop's a bad movie. Definitely go see it, because it's, you know, this is just opinions, and, you know, opinions are assholes. So, or opinions are like assholes, whatever that analogy is.
Everyone has one.
Yeah, so, but I think this is going to be a, I think that people, I'm going to be the bad guy, of course, because I'm not, you know, I'm always indie horror all the way. But I think it's one of those things where the idea is so cool, and actually getting something made that looks that great is an achievement for what it's on. So yes, this is a big step in indie horror, especially this day and age, making something as outrageous as this.
Uh-huh.
That's badass. That I can respect, and that I stand behind. But you still got to look at the movie for what it is as well. Like, yes, this is a huge stepping stone for something like this, because nothing else is like this exists.
Yeah. I think here's
just getting a wide release like this on Blu-ray that you can go to Best Buy and pick up.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But the movie is what it is, and that's just my take on it.
Yeah. I mean, my view is, Lowell has this idea. He has
same bases now.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I'm Lowell, him and I go way back. He retweeted a tweet of mine one time.
Oh wow!
But hey, we gotta be nice. But he's actually gonna be retweeting the link to the show. He's a good guy.
Sorry, Lowell. No, like I said, I'm staying behind what I said.
That's fine, man. And that's the thing. Yeah. Like movies like this, everyone's gonna have an opinion about it, and that's fine. The difference is you watched it and you have an opinion. That's great. I see this movie as, if they can pull off Wolf Cop 2, this is a good stepping stone into possibly a really good sequel. And we see that happen with some movies where the first movie is okay, and it introduces us
name
to the
one.
Characters in the world. What do you mean, name one?
Name one where the sequel surpasses the original.
X-Men. Spider-Man.
No, for real.
No, I'm serious. X-Men 1 was okay. X-Men 2 is awesome. The original Spider-Man flick is okay. Spider-Man 2, awesome. Alien, never mind. Alien's awesome. Aliens 2 is awesome. And,
give you Aliens is better.
But it does happen, though.
I'm not talking about popcorn blockbusters. Jesus Christ. See, like, no one likes X-Men 2.
Everyone loves X-Men 2. What are you talking about? That opening
scene?
No one
likes old X-Men movies at all. Same thing with Spidey.
Fuck you.
Tobey Maguire is like one of the worst things to ever happen.
Right,
to
but Spider-Man 2, he's horrible. But Spider-Man 2 as a whole is awesome. What I'm saying is, like, I don't think he really wanted to do like a straight-up horror movie. Like, this is basically, you know, this is almost borderline comic book territory. So he's setting up.
Yeah, no, it's what I expected.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted.
But I think now that all the introductions are out of the way, if he gets a bigger budget, Wolf Cop could be fucking awesome. I mean, here's what I want. I mean, there's what you want from a movie, and there's what you get. Okay, Wolf Cop. Yes, the third act, the final act, totally fizzles, and by that time, you're not. Yes, I wasn't as invested with the characters, and I was just kind of watching it play through, which is fine, because up to that point, I was having a lot of fun, which is great. What I want to see is Wolf Cop in the big city patrolling the streets, right? I mean, that's what we want to see. You know what I mean? I mean,
I would have been okay if they did a RoboCop spin on that.
Exactly, yes.
He's not hidden. That's the thing, is like it felt like they were trying to hide Wolf Cop. Like he was like a killer, like a serial killer. He came and then he disappeared.
Yeah, the bad.
You know,
thing.
At least with like RoboCop, they embraced the idea of RoboCop. Like if they would have embraced Wolf Cop, kind of like a Teen Wolf thing, where he turns and they're like, "Oh shit, yes, he's awesome." I kind of would have dug that a little bit better, but they try to like have this mysterious side to it.
Uh-huh.
And I feel it wasted so much time on that, that if they just embraced the idea of Wolf Cop, the movie would have worked and flowed a little bit better. Yeah.
And I totally get all those. I mean, yes, the idea of Wolf Cop is so good that there's 100 ways it could possibly go that would be, you know, maybe better than what we got. But I mean, I think I dig the idea so much maybe that I kind of, maybe I have blinders on, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've watched it twice and.
Yeah, blinders on. Your opinion's your opinion. Yeah. You can stand behind it. I mean, everybody, like, there's going to be.
There's a lot of people that like it. There's a lot of people that.
People like it, you know?
What I'm saying is I think that this could go into being, you know, a really fun sequel. I mean, here's another one. There's The Raid and The Raid 2. I mean, come on, you know, for The Raid 2.
Okay, I'll give you The Raid 2.
Totally blows the first one out of the water. But, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, it's a 79-minute, you know, popcorn flick with a Wolf Cop. I think if you, you know, I would never say, you know, if this was like $25 at Best Buy, I was like, ugh, you know, I don't know, maybe rent it first and see what you like, see if you like it, and then buy it. But, you know, for the price that it was, I feel like this, it's very
accessible. I would definitely suggest people buy it. I mean, support it, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I want the film to do well. I shouldn't say that, and then I'm talking, you know, negative about it. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. I still want the film to succeed.
Yeah.
But I'm not one of those people that just because, you know, it's the same thing as, like, being at a festival, I always say, is that these fucking bloggers and stuff, they know the filmmaker, so automatically the film gets a good review.
Right.
And I think filmmakers know that, but it's just, it's bullshit. Like, just, dude, tell the truth.
Yeah.
Like, tell how you really feel.
Yeah.
You know, and it was something where, you know, I saw We Are Still Here, and I wrote a review on it. And I love the movie. It's a positive review, but I did pick apart a couple things. But even, like, the director contacted me and said, dude, your review is super emotional for me. Like, you know, at least you got it. But that's – they respect that more than just, like, stop being overly positive. Like, deep down, just tell your opinion.
Yeah.
It works because I guarantee you, me speaking my opinion is going to make people want to watch it more than just saying, oh, it's great. It's a great, you know, Wolf Cop movie, blah, blah, blah.
I think so. That happens to me a lot when I'll see.
With, like, you being a fan of it and me not. I mean, this is going to spark more interest to people to see it because they're going to be like, oh, I want to prove Brad wrong because he's an asshole. So
let's talk about there's a couple of key scenes.
Everything with Jonathan Cherry, who plays that.
Yeah.
Wiley guy is awesome.
He's great.
He's fucking hysterical in every single movie he's in.
He's great, and I want to see more of that guy and that character.
No, just watch Goon. He's like the best.
He's fantastic in Goon. I mean, that guy needs to be in more movies for sure.
Hey, dude, he's like. Did you ever watch Goon?
Oh yeah, dude, I love Goon.
I got it's two great. Rules. Stay away from my fucking Percocet. Do you have any fucking Percocets?
Right. He's great, man. I mean, for what I got from the commentary was a lot of his lines, he took the script and just kind of started riffing on it. And what he came up with was his scenes were just great. And
oh, dude, everything he's in, every film that I've seen him in, he makes me laugh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really hope, I mean, I think the standouts were, I think that Leo Fafard, like, I think I really dig. You know, I don't know if this was his first movie or what, but I mean, you know, some people said he was boring. They didn't like his character, but I really dug the guy. I really dug what he brought to it. What did you think? So, well, we kind of skipped over the transformation. I think that scene is great, practical, gooey. Like I said, I don't know, spoiler alert, he transforms from his dick. That's the first transformation you see, which I've never seen in a movie ever. And, you know, I mean, that's, you gotta give it props for that. Right?
I guess.
No.
I mean, yeah, transformations are always, that's the key component with werewolf films. Like, if you have a werewolf movie and you do it and you're gonna show an on-screen transformation, your transformation has to be good because. If you don't do a transformation, people are going to be pissed that you didn't do one.
Yeah.
If you do one and it doesn't look good, they're going to be pissed.
Yeah.
So you got to make that. I mean, that's the one thing that can make or break a werewolf movie. And at least with this one, The transformation is really, really well done.
Yeah.
You know, so I really, really dug that, watching that. And also with, we're going to talk about late phases next. It's the same thing with late phases. The transformation catches you.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. What did you think of the werewolf, love scene?
I mean, I thought it was going to be funny. And I thought it was going to go, like, a little bit further than it would. And right. I felt like it held back.
I feel like if they – I mean, that scene, like, it was – at first I was like, oh, here we go. Oh, my gosh, this would be hilarious. And, yeah, it was a little bit lacking. Like, if they would have almost done it beat for beat, like the Top Gun love scene, I would have been on the floor just, you know, doubled over in laughter. You know what I mean?
You're never, ever – going to get it as the Top Gun love scene.
That love scene.
Top Gun, Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon 2. But that
Top, right, Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah, that Top Gun love
also
scene.
Also good that they run together for me. It's just one big movie.
That Top Gun love scene, like, I almost measure every love scene by that love scene. And I was like, I thought that's where they were going to go. And if they would have done that, it would have been hysterical. I feel like, yes, it was lacking some tongue-in-cheek humor. It was lacking the 80s type ballad, you know. And the idea is, this is, we're
they should play like Bob down. Seger or something with that.
Exactly. Bob Seger.
Yeah, what was that what's that song that the Metallica covered? It was a Bob Seger song originally.
I don't know.
It's got the plays of the saxophone in the beginning. The saxophone.
I don't know, man.
Shit. Here I am. On the road again. Here I am. Oh, Turn the Page.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, if they played Turn the Page or something, like, that would have been awesome. You know, just that sexy, steamy sound.
Something, man. It needed some saxophone. You know,
it just wasn't there. Yeah.
It needed the.
There's some Kenny G in there at least.
Kenny G.
Like, make people smile and laugh. It was honestly just a kind of a boring love scene when it could have won the movie over. Because you're expecting it to happen, you know?
You know what it needed was some Bruce Hornsby in the range. That's what it needed.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. So, and, you know, like, I think there was a lot of intention, and yeah, I can see that they didn't reach the intentions that they wanted to, and I don't know exactly why, but, you know, for me, I dug it. What I want to mention about the, we got to get into some late phases here, but, what I wanted to mention is this Blu-ray. I mean, it's fucking cheap, and the commentary with Lowell Dean and then their special effects artist, Emerson Ziffel, is great. It's really fun listening to them kind of reminisce about the film. They give a lot of insight into the budget and some of the constraints that they had. And it's a really fun commentary, really fun to listen to. There is a kind of feature-length featurette or special feature documentary.
Spit it out, Sean.
I'm sorry. I may need some more crack in here. But the documentary is great. It gives you the entire picture of, you know, how they got the film funded, the ideas, and all the way through production. And if you're a fan of behind the scenes, documentaries, this is a really great one, and it gives you a lot of insight into the film. And then there's a lot of other things involved with this. There's a behind the scenes, there's the makeup where they start going to all the makeup and stuff like that. So I think, like, as a whole, for the price, this is a stacked Blu-ray, and I think this is something that I would definitely recommend that you pick up if you're into all that. And I definitely – it's weird. Like, I'll buy a movie that I know is terrible if it has a really great documentary on how it was made.
Like your Batman stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
You say Batman Returns better than Batman?
No.
Sequel surpasses original?
I would even say that The Dark Knight is not as good as Batman Begins.
Oh, bullshit. I'm talking about Batman Returns.
No, Batman Returns by far is not as good as the original, as Tim Burton's Batman at all. That movie, that series, that Batman just goes downhill every single...
I like how people, like, stuck behind it until, like, Batman Begins come out. Then all the fans turn and they were like, yeah, Batman, the original Batman movie sucked.
The original Batman movie is awesome and the greatest Batman movie ever put to celluloid.
Oh, whatever, dude. It gets Batman all wrong.
I know, but it's great.
Oh, God, the dude. Joker bullshit.
I'm not steeped into Batman lore. I can give two shits. Is it a fun movie? Yes. Is Michael Keaton the best Batman ever put in the suit? Fuck yes.
No.
Okay.
Not at all, my friend.
Moving along. We need to get into late phases.
This is kind of the same thing as they put Catwoman as a fucking villain. And she turns into Catwoman because she's licked by cats. It was funny.
Batman Returns.
I think I mentioned Kevin Smith, like, that evening with Kevin Smith. Because I mentioned about Wild Wild West. He mentions that, like, he had this confrontation with Tim Burton. Because Tim Burton used that the end of Planet of the Apes. And, you know, Kevin Smith is like, holy shit, we did that in our comic book. And Tim Burton said, I would never fucking watch a Kevin Smith movie. And I never read a fucking comic book. And then Kevin Smith said, yeah, we can tell because you made fucking Batman. That shit was hilarious. Because
that's awesome.
Talk about to get something 100% wrong. That's that movie.
All I know is in Batman Returns, they scratch a CD like it's a record.
That's a good scene. It's amazing.
All right, moving along here. I think we've covered enough of Wolf Cop. I would say check it out and let us know what you think. I would love to hear what you guys think if you're on Team Brad or Team Sean here. But
No teams.
Dude, I hate that shit.
No, you either like the movie or don't.
So, anyway.
What did you whisper?
Team Jacob. That's a Twilight reference. I've never seen a Twilight movie ever.
All right. I'm not talking late phases now.
Moving along, man. Let's dive into late phases, : Night of the Lone Wolf.
Hey, speed limit 25. Easy, boy.
It reminds me of that place that we used to live in when I was a kid.
Looks like we beat the Moors here.
I can't see you, but you smell beautiful.
Did you just move next door?
Any sign of this assailant?
It's just an animal attack.
This has happened before.
Attacks like these happen all the time.
Please, stay in your house, keep the doors closed until we sort this out, okay?
Seems like such a nice place to live.
People don't come to places like this to live. I'm here to die.
Can you make silver bullets?
Yeah.
Can you do silver shotgun shells?
I need you to relax. That's what I need you to do.
Why'd they add that colon, man? I've always known this is late phases. Why the hell they add that colon?
It's just what distributors do. That shit was always late phases.
Exactly. I don't
know. The original poster still says late phases. I don't know where that lone wolf bullshit comes from.
Dark Sky Films, eat a bag of gummy dicks.
Ugh, that's not good.
Anyway, late phases, directed by...
I do not support that statement at all.
That's okay.
I love Dark Sky.
Agree to disagree. Dark Sky film. They've had a lot of great films. I would just the you know, the subtitle is ridiculous. Directed by Adrian Garcia. I had this right earlier. Bogliano.
Yes.
Starring Nick DiMicci and, it says starring Ethan Embry. Would you say he's a starring role or more of a supporting role?
He's in it. This is going to be a fun one to talk about because I mentioned Late Faces early on. I said I liked it, and then you watched it and you went ape shit. And I'm like, why the fuck are you going ape shit? It's gonna be a funny conversation because
why'd I go ape shit over Late Faces?
Like I'm like with you, but I'm against you at the same time.
Wow. Okay. I think what I really dug about it, I think mostly is Nick DiMicci's performance, and I think almost the werewolves come second to his character and what he's going through. If you know what I mean. For me, the werewolves weren't like they were okay, but they weren't that. What I was really drawn to the movie. I really loved.
I think this is one of the better werewolf movies in the past like 15 years.
Totally.
But that's also because there's not a lot of good werewolf movies.
Yeah. And the use of practical effects definitely has me on board. I mean, but the setup is basically this, Ethan Embry plays Nick DiMicci's.
DiMicci,
dear God. Jesus. Plays his son. Nick DiMicci's character is being put into. A senior citizen's community, I guess, and his character happens to be blind, and he's getting used to, you know, he's new to the area, getting used to his neighbors and everything, and then the night that
he's a war veteran. Don't forget that
he's a war veteran. Yes, definitely. The night that his first night there is a werewolf attack. These are condos. And the woman next door is murdered by a werewolf, and you know, and shit goes down from there. And it's one of those things where he knows something that everyone else doesn't know or is ignoring.
Well, he doesn't even really know what's going on. That's the cool part,
right? But he knows something is going down, and he needs to prepare. You know, and I liked his journey as a character. I think more than everything else, and I think that. Nick DiMicci is like he's a chameleon in this role. You know, you totally buy that he's he's this veteran. You totally buy that he's a badass, and you totally buy that he's blind. And I think for me, that really, that's pretty much what sold me on the film and why I loved it so much. And I really liked the kind of the design that they ended up with on the werewolves. So, I mean, that's what did it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So here's why I'm with you and I'm against you at the same time. Personally, I love Bogliano, but I like Bogliano because he throws me back to when I was a little kid renting new releases in the 90s off the wall. All his films are cheap.
Uh-huh.
They are very straightforward. He just puts people in unique situations and goes along with it. I don't feel that there's any character development. I don't feel that there's any story arcs. I just feel he thinks of cool situations and puts everybody in there. I think Nick DiMicci's a good actor, but I just don't think – like I think his scripts are weak, but – that said, he's like one of my favorites at the same time because he makes me feel young again. Like from I'll Never Die Alone to Cold Sweat to Penumbra to Here Comes the Devil. They're all very basic stories, but he just puts them in unique situations. Like Cold Sweat's like one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a group of kids that get trapped by a bunch of elderly people, and the elderly people wipe them, like soak them in nitroglycerin. So if they fall down, if they hit against anything, they'll blow up.
Damn.
Like that's a
bad day.
Yeah. Someone told me that plot and I'm like, well, that sounds amazing. And they're like, well, it's not that great. And I'm like, yeah, but that reminds me of like the ridiculousness of movies when I was younger. You know, Penumbra is basically a woman that's pulled into an apartment, and you have to decide or not if the people that are among her are devil worshippers. You know, just very basic. Here Comes the Devil is kind of the same thing, where it's, you know, two kids that might or may not be possessed by the devil.
Right.
And we're just sort of, like, they're just very basic stories, and they look cheap. They look like they're from the 90s, but that's the main aspect that I like about Bogliano, is because he makes films that are like, feels like they're specifically just for me. It feels like the crazy shit that I love that's sitting on VHS on my shelf that no one else likes is these movies. Like, and I think there's a certain type of person that likes these movies for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, that's my own, it's like almost like I'm praising and criticizing.
Right.
But, you know, but at the same, but at see, the same time, it's a weird situation.
Yeah. But I mean, but Bogliano didn't write Late Phases, you know, Eric Stoltz did.
Nick DiMicci did.
Eric Stoltz did.
No, that's what I'm saying.
And Eric, the only thing
Eric
he's,
Stoltz,
the only thing he's really, credited
the red-haired
with
red haired elephant man.
No. The only thing he's really, credited with is Under the Bed.
Oh God! Yeah,
the Steven Seagal flick.
That explains a ton.
What?
Oh God!
I mean, Under the Bed is not a great film. Steven C. Miller, great guy, love the guy. I'm really, really pulling for his for the movie Submerged. I have no idea where that went. That's done. I'm really pulling for him as a director, but. But Eric Stoltz, like, he doesn't have, like, the credits, you know? So basically, Bogliano got hired on to do the script, where I think most of the stuff he's done, has it been self-scripted or not? Some of it. Penumbra, no. Quote, Here Comes the Devil, he wrote himself. But he, you know, I think of Bogliano.
He writes all his own movies.
I think Phases. Him more of as a writer-director. He was hired on for late Phases.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he also could have met, like, Eric Stoltz at a festival when Under the Bed was playing and stuff, too, because they both had movies the same year. And well, that's another thing about Bogliano, is that he dishes out movies literally every year. That's not, like a short – I mean, he literally has a movie every year for the past, like – I take that back, because I think – Here Comes the Devil was his last feature. But before then, he literally, I think he had a movie every year.
Yeah, I mean, the dude is, I mean, he's no slouch. I mean, he's busy. He's always churning something out.
There's a problem with that.
Is
that when you happen to do that, your movies are watered down. They're rushed. They're not as probably good as they could be.
Right.
Because, dude, from the time that, like, the normal amount of time is, I think they say 4 years for a film to be written, to be produced, festival circuit, to be put out. He's doing this, basically filming these movies back to back, which he probably has a very small amount of money for each one. It just feels like he doesn't spend a lot of time. So you kind of notice the shortcomings of these movies, like the problems in Cold Sweat, the problems in Penumbra. Like, Penumbra is a good movie, but it lacks a little bit here and in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but for the most part, at least with Penumbra, it's a stronger script, and it's interesting between the characters because they have cool conversations, and it keeps you guessing the entire movie. Cold Sweat, very, very small script. It's just that the scenes are really long because they have to move so slow.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ups and downs to his movies. That said, I still really like them, but I can see why people don't as well.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when Late Phases came out, he did people, when it played at festivals, people raved about it and said it was one of the best things ever. And then the people that hated it truly hated it. Hmm. Like, they thought it was the worst. And I mean, to me, Late Phases is very bland. It's a bland script. But it has that throwback 80s feel, especially when all, well, I can't go too into detail about it.
I don't want to get spoilers.
But whenever the werewolf happens, like, it feels like a bunch of movies are being pulled together from the 80s to make this. Like, it feels like all his movies are homages. Like, he's not original in any way. Other than, I think, Cold Sweat, I think rubbing people in nitroglycerin is pretty original. It's silly. It's a silly concept, but it still works. But I feel like, you know, it's his love child for The Howling, you know, because there's one sequence in there that looks and feels exactly like The Howling. And it's when, you know, Nick D'Amici comes face-to-face in the house with it.
Yeah.
And... like, that's that sequence where Dee Wallace is, like, in that doctor's office and the werewolf rises behind her. It's almost like it feels like that. And that's what I think Bogliano does, is that he's a filmmaker that truly loves things from the 80s, and he wants to recreate that. Well, and he does it really well.
Yeah.
But there's also part of it being not great because he's not original in any way.
Yeah. Well,
that makes any sense.
No, I think that late phases, like
what, one of my favorite filmmakers, and I just kind of like fucking took a poke at him. It's know, funny, man. Like, I love, like, every time I hear there's a Bogliano movie, I'm like super excited.
Well, I think on, I mean, here's the thing with I mean, I've only seen one other Bogliano flick, and that was Here Comes the Devil. I just watched it the other night, and it feels very like. Very independent. It feels there's definitely like an art film feeling to it. Like he's trying to figure out his craft, you know, as he goes. Like there's some like really weird like shock zooms in the film. You know, like it's very, the pacing's very slow. Some of the scenes kind of go on a little too long. There's a little too much breathing room in them, but there's enough in there to really get under my skin. I had a hard time going to sleep after watching Here Comes the Devil, just
because. That's
because
your kids are possessed.
I have kids, but I think that aspect of the film and how he handles those aspects of the film really got under my skin. I feel like there are certain aspects of to the movie that definitely needed some editing, needed someone to come in and kind of guide the process along and guide the script along. With Late Phases, I feel like he's, you can definitely tell he's hired on to direct the script, because I feel like there's a lot of, the movie gets by a lot on its casting and the effects. I mean, Nick D'Amici's great. Ethan Embry, kind of a lower key character in this film. He does his part great. You know, Lance Guest, he's all right. Tom Noonan's in there, and he's as Father Roger, and I really dug his scenes.
And Larry Fessenden.
Larry Fessenden is in there, and he was a producer on the film. And you know,
he produces everything.
Yeah, and then there's, I mean, I didn't recognize some of the women that were cast, but apparently they were they've had their day. Like, they've been in a lot of kind of genre films and TV.
And dude, you haven't even mentioned Dana Ashbrook.
Dana Ashbrook.
Yeah, Dana Ashbrook's in it.
I don't know. I haven't mentioned her. Sorry. Hey,
what were some of the women?
Tina Louise. Rutiana Alda. Caitlin O'Haney.
Fucking Tina Louise. Wasn't she from... That's the chick from Gilligan's Island, right?
I think she went... Yes, yeah, yeah. And Stepford Wives. Uh-huh. And she was hot. And there's a very... Like, when these women are introduced, there's a very, like, Stepford Wives feel to it. So it's fantastic seeing her... You're kind of in a Stepford Wives role, you know? So I feel like Late Phases gets by on its homages.
I forget all the women that were in, because I remember there was a lot. Because, I mean, it's all, like, there's like a group of four of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I'm going to look it up real quick.
Those aspects, like the homages to the 80s, there's some great creature effects in it. I think that he takes a script that was probably a mediocre script that had been sitting around.
Oh, that's right.
You know, and
Alda is in this.
Yeah.
I love her.
And I feel like
she's in the movie we talked about just the other day. She was in The Dark Half.
Oh, really? That wasn't the other day. That was months ago.
Okay. You know what? Don't criticize. Don't criticize. Well, she was also in Amityville.
It's late in Florida. It's late and you're tired.
Girls Night Out. No, I'm saying that she's a famous she's a famous horror movie actress. So that's I forgot about her being in that. I saw Late Phases. Shit, feels like so long ago.
What I'm saying is, I feel like Bogliano comes in and takes a mediocre script and elevates it to the max. And I think he does all he can to really make this, you know, a very good entry into the werewolf genre, which I feel like it's a very strong entry into it. And like I said, like just watching Nick DiMicci in this is enough to really carry me through the entire film because he's so good in it.
Dude, how much you want to – like I wouldn't be afraid to put my life savings on that Nick DiMicci polish up that script.
Maybe.
Because there's no way that the guy that wrote Under the Bed wrote something as least that's tolerable. Because Under the Bed was, oh man, I really like Little Monsters. I want to make a violent Little Monsters Goonies movie. That's exactly what that bullshit is.
Yeah.
But Nick DiMicci's script for Cold in July and We Are What We Are are fucking incredible. Like Cold in July is amazing. You know, and even like Stakeland, all those fucking characters, all that, each one spends a certain amount of time with each one in a fucking vampire apocalyptic movie. And you feel for everybody, even like Daniel Harris's character that's in it for it feels like 15 minutes. We love her. You know, just even the opening to that movie, having that kid's life being torn apart in the beginning of that movie, it works and it just so hard hitting. Yeah. Part of that is Jim Mickle's vision. Cause it's, you know, Jim Mickle and him work together all the time. So he's just a fascinating, even his very first script with, I don't know if it was his first script, but his first work with Jim Mickle was, Mulberry Street,
mm-hmm.
which is I stayed away from that movie because of the concept, but I felt so stupid. Have you ever watched Mulberry Street?
I think it's got to be one of those movies that's on my list that maybe someday I'll check out. It was one of those eight films to die for.
Yeah, and, that's one reason I stayed away from it.
Why I stayed away from it.
Where it was like there's an infestation in New York City where people become were-rats. I'm like, were-rats? Like they literally become rats. Dude, that movie's so fucking good.
Huh.
It's so goddamn intense.
Maybe I'll give it a chance
and
now.
And they don't make it. Saying were rats is one of the dumbest thing ever. Like people,
I think it's awesome.
People turn into rats.
I mean, dude, if I would have known that, I would have checked that out in a second.
But anyways, like the movie between the daddy daughter connection, where she's trying to get to her dad, is just so fucking good, and it's super emotional as well. Like Nick DiMicci, he's a great screenwriter, and I hope that he writes more. But I guarantee you. He worked on that script because there's no way that script went through.
I'll bet you that him and that DiMicci and Bogliano got together and did a polish on the script for sure. Oh, for sure.
Man, fucking Under the Bed. I mean, I bet Under the Bed was even polished.
Oh man, I don't know. I'm not sure if Steven C. Miller's a polisher of scripts. I'll have to ask him one of these days. But
Is this the one film he doesn't promote?
He does every now and then. It just came on Netflix Instant.
And even Brad Miska produced that from Bloody and Disgusting, and he never, ever talks about it. People hate that. I've never met one person. I think that's his one. I think it's weird because I think that's one of his best-looking movies,
mm-hmm.
Especially with the creature effects, other than kind of the cinematography in Silent Night. I think it's one of his better-looking movies. But, dude, it's terrible. But
yeah, it's not like a movie. Sorry, nope. Steven. Sorry, Steven. So
late phases,
man. So we're talking about, so Wolf Cop had a pretty cool transformation. What did you think about the transformations in this flick?
They're not as good as Wolf Cop, but it's weird because once they show the werewolf, you're like, are they werewolves?
They're werecats. They almost look
or are they cat-ish. Like, is this like Sleepwalker's sequel to where people are turning into cats? Like a cat, rabbit, dog type looking motherfucker.
They do look unique.
But that's another thing. That's another reason why I like the movie was, how they looked. I thought that was unique. And what really hooked me was that, spoiler free, is once they introduce the blind character, which is fascinating because you know where this movie's going to lead, and he's also ex-military, so you know he's definitely knows his shit. But there's another big reveal in the movie where I was like, the little kid inside me was like, oh man, it would be so cool if they actually did this, and they fucking do it. And I got super fucking excited. And that's what won me over more than anything, was that I was really, really hoping, because that always happens in movies. I'm like, oh man, it would be so cool if they did this, and they never do. But I don't even like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Without spoiler or anything.
I think so. Yes.
Give me a hint.
I can't give you a hint right now.
You can't. You can text me. text me the hint. So, anyways, but it's just one of those things in the film, is that when it happens, like it there's so many different occurrences in the movie that kind of like there's little like twists and turns, and that's the one thing that works, because Bogliano's most of his films are all very straightforward.
Yeah.
And with late phases, it's still straightforward. There's nothing too special about it, but there's a few things that take some turns, especially the father-son relationship, the special surprise that I'm talking about, him being blind and working through this, and how he does it, and how careful and creative he is, but with his disability. Like, I think all that really, really works for the film. And that's why I thought it was, you know, I still think it is one of the better werewolf movies there is. It's just, like, this does feel like something – a lot of people say the 90s were the weakest years in horror. I've heard that for many times, especially from a closer friend of mine. He said everything from the 90s sucks. I disagree. I actually really like the 90s, but that's also because I grew up watching the stuff that was on the shelves, the new release stuff. And that's kind of where this belongs, it seems. It feels like it's 1998, you know, direct-to-video movie. Yeah. But I like that about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a solid flick. And, you know, I mean, this compared to Wolf Cop, I mean, this is definitely like a straight horror flick. You know what I mean? There's not, you know, and that almost, I think elevates it above Wolf Cop for me, you know.
Ooh, let me say a disclaimer. Stick up for Wolf Cop a little bit. I'm an asshole, and I really don't care for comedies that much. And when you mix comedy and horror together, I most of the time I do not like it. So that's another thing that kind of lost me. But another thing is, like you say, comedy. The concept is comical,
right?
But the movie doesn't try to be that funny. Only kind of the beginning, him dealing with being an alcoholic, and the Wiley character.
Yeah.
Like other than that, it's not too comical. Like him even becoming a wolf, like a wolf cop. It doesn't really go anywhere, per se. Like, it doesn't, I'm saying in the realm of comedy.
Yeah.
Like, it really doesn't do anything, like, to try to be funny. And I did respect that part. But, I mean, people that are going to go in thinking that they're watching a comedy, they're wrong.
Oh, for Wolf Cop? Yeah.
I mean, you don't think that's a... I mean, it's not a laugh out loud thing. It's almost like a situational comedy, like a drunk, an alcoholic cop gets turned into a werewolf. That's comical, but they don't take that and use that to its advantage a lot.
Right.
You know, like Teen Wolf, they use the aspect of the werewolf to be funny. They don't do that in Wolf Cop. It gets pretty serious at times. I did enjoy that part, but then again, you know, that's me trying to push out the comedy because I don't want to see it.
You just have a black piece of coal for your heart.
You know, I walked out of one movie at South by Southwest, and it was a comedy.
Anyway, back to late phases. By the way, speaking of wolf werewolf transformations, we need to plug our Todd Farmer episode.
Yeah, we were gonna. I was. It was funny because I was thinking about it. I was like, "Oh man, we should do like a top 10 top 10 list, and I was like, let's do Werewolf. And I'm like, oh, fuck, no, we can't do that.
What episode was that? What were we covering?
Ginger Snaps.
Ginger Snaps, that's right.
That's right. Todd Farmer Ginger picked Snaps. That when we were a Screen Factory podcast.
Yes. All I remember is Todd Farmer's his goatee or beard kept scraping against his phone, and I just had a hell of a time trying to lessen that.
Sounds hot.
Yeah. Cool, man. So back to late phases. Night of the Werewolf.
Is it Night of the Wolf?
Night of the Lone Wolf. Sorry.
Night of the Lone. Oh, God, that's even worse. What does that even mean?
I have no idea. That's just, like I said, just slapped on there by the freaking studio. Freaking Dark Sky Films.
Well, dude, because late phases, no one's going to know what it's about.
I guess not.
Like, as well just change it, the title to Werewolves at a Retirement Home. Because seriously, you put werewolves at a retirement home, that's going to catch more people's attention than
Werewolves late phases. At the retirement home.
You're going to think late phases is some kind of like sci-fi drama or some bullshit.
I don't know. There's a on the Blu-ray, which is I think still fairly cheap from Amazon. I got mine for like $9.99.
It's Dark Sky. Most of their shit's always pretty cheap.
There's a pretty good commentary with Adrian Bugliano. It's pretty dry, but he gives a lot of information, so he keeps it cracking for most of the movie, which is pretty good.
That's cracking.
Very short kind of making of documentary where you actually. They mainly interview Bogliano, Nick Nemeachy, and Fessenden. It's a pretty, it's more of like a, EPK type package, but, it gives some information on the casting and everything and why they chose certain actors. And then there's the thing that I like me being, cause I used to back in the day want to go into special effects, and, there's a really cool VFX kind of featurette, which kind of goes through their stages of them creating the makeup for the werewolves. It's like they just took a camera in there while they were doing the makeup and kind of filmed.
I like those.
And it's very, I guess, bland. There's hardly an interview, but you're just seeing the guys work on it and them telling you what they're doing. And it's really cool, especially if you ever want to go into creature effects. It's a pretty cool kind of behind the scenes look at how these were created. I really dug it. So for my money, it was a pretty cool effects. I mean, I'm glad they didn't do just a bare bones release, which they could have done for this movie. But there's some meat on the bones of the Blu-ray here, and it looks, dude, the movie looks pretty great. I think this is the most, I guess, most mainstream looking of the movies I've seen from Bogliano.
It's definitely because like I said previously, most of his films look cheap.
Yeah.
To where I don't know what he filmed. Like, he was filming with, you know, old cameras. But this one, he definitely has a higher quality camera.
Yeah. There's the lighting. There's the lighting and everything.
This is one of his most well-made. Yeah. This is his most well-made movie.
Yeah. But I think, I would definitely recommend Late Phases. It's up there in the pantheon of good werewolf movies, which there isn't a whole lot. I started watching A Company of Wolves the other night, and that werewolf transformation is horrible.
Mm. Like,
god awful. The movie, on the other hand, I really enjoyed, but
you're god awful.
The initial transformation is one of the lesser. But moving along.
Pick of the week.
Are we doing a pick of the week?
I was going to.
Where are you going to? Do I have mine? Give me one second.
Let's do
pick of the week, and then we're going to freaking draw our winner, man, for this coffee. Cool. And then we're going to call it a day. So let me find my – oh, I know what my pick of the week is.
Go first.
Me go first?
Yeah.
Well, I got to bring this shit up. Hold on.
What are you bringing up exactly?
All right, here we go. My pick of the week, it's not necessarily horror, but I was kind of going through I really love like underwater films. Like The Abyss is one of my favorite movies, which is not coming to fucking Blu-ray for some reason. Ugh, drives me nuts. But I really love like underwater you know, movies. So there was a movie that I saw. I was kind of browsing through Best Buy one day, and I saw this movie called Pioneer. And I was like, well, what the hell is Pioneer? Because the poster looks pretty awesome. And it's by the writer of Insomnia, I think he directed the original 1997, I think he's from Norway, Norwegian film, and then Christopher Nolan remade it in 2002. And, he's also known for Prozac Nation.
Oh, Christine, that's a good movie.
But, the director's name is Eric Skjoldvarg.
Skjoldvarg. Jesus Christ.
These Norwegian names, man. It starts off very much, the opening 30 minutes are fucking tense. The underwater sequences are all pretty amazing I really freaking wish The Abyss would come out on Blu-ray, because these scenes look great. And I was really, surprised how good they look. From there, it kind of devolves more into kind of a paranoid thriller of sorts, political paranoid thriller. But, as a whole, like, this movie was really great. The main actor, Askell Henney, I think he was in Headhunters, the 2011 flick. But he's really, really good. He's the lead in this, and it takes place in the 80s I don't know, man. I really, really, really love this flick, and I feel like more people need to check it out. But the basic plot is the Norwegians are working with the Americans to build an underwater oil pipeline from an oil rig to the Norwegian coastline back in the 80s, and it's one of those things that if they get it done, it's really gonna help improve Norway's economy and stuff like that. So there's like a lot kind of riding on this to get done, and during their first deep dive, shit goes down, things get tense, bad stuff happens, and the main character, played by Askell Henney, basically gets blamed for everything that went down, and he's trying to basically clear his name and figure out what exactly happened. So it's a really good flick. It kind of gets slow in certain areas, but I really, really dug it, and I think a lot of people should check it out.
I bet you did.
Yeah, it was a good flick. It's really good looking.
I haven't watched it yet.
They really nail, I mean, it feels like it was filmed back in the 80s, early 90s. Like,
isn't that when it's supposed to take place?
It is, but it feels like one of those films. Like, he actually, the colors aren't as crisp. And that's why a lot of people were kind of shitting on the Blu-ray, because the colors aren't as crisp. But it looks, I mean, he kind of went out of his way to make it look, you know, like it's a film from that. And they nail it, man. They really nail everything about it. The props, the costumes and everything. And for the most part, I think I dug it for Askell Henney's performance. I think he's great. So, but yeah. Stephen Lang's in it. Stephen Lang's great as always. Wes Bentley is in it.
God. And Wes Bentley. That's what I call him.
He's pretty decent.
One note, Wes Bentley.
I don't think he's less one note in this, which is what I liked. So. I think this is the one film I actually really liked him in. And he's one actor I really do not care for.
Wes Bentley boners.
Yeah. So anyway, movie's called Pioneer. It's out. It's out now.
No. I'm doing an older movie. I saw this a couple years ago. I didn't see it during its release. I even forget how I saw it, on Netflix or something. But it is by far one of the... Like, this is could easily probably fall in my top, like, 100. But it's, I know 100 is like a crazy, crazy number.
Damn.
But yeah, no, it's called Acolytes. Joel Egerton is in it.
Okay.
And it's about three kids who find out that in their hometown, they find out who this serial killer really is. And so they blackmail him. Dude, it is so fucking good. But anyways, yeah, Joel Egerton plays the serial killer, and it's quite upfront that's who it is in the very beginning. It's not like a big, like, turn of events, but they find out quickly who it is, and they use that to their advantage. And it's just extremely well done, well shot. Very tense. The soundtrack is fantastic. The all the acting is just the chemistry between the kids. It works. Their animosity between each other, it works. It feels like real teenagers, and the whole film just feels really real. Like this could is like really happening. I mean, you don't have to give any suspension of disbelief whatsoever, because every turn that they take, you're like, oh man, that actually could possibly happen. Like, I could see that totally happening in this situation. And that was just a lot of fun. And it's just one of those movies that can really, really get under your skin. And also, if you're a fan of Acolytes, I would definitely check out John Hewitt's other movies, which I know X was on Netflix for quite some time. You would notice it from the poster because it's just a woman in stockings bending over and you can see booty.
Yeah.
X is really good. And his new movie called Turkey Shoot is pretty pretty fun. No, it is not a remake of Escape 2000. That's also known as Turkey Shoot. But yeah, he has one called Red Ball, I think, as well. It's a decent low budget movie. But yeah, I would definitely check it out. And also,
what's the name of the movie again? One more time.
Acolytes.
Acolytes.
Acolytes, I guess is how you spell it.
I'll figure it out.
But yeah, just Joel Egerton is in it, so just remember that. He's Joel Egerton's a great actor, but this is by far one of his best roles.
Cool.
And another side note, not a pick of the week, because it's a few years ago, like I would say 3 or 4 years ago, there was a movie that was advertised very briefly called Christie, and it disappeared. And just a couple months ago, it got released over in Germany on Blu-ray. And I bought that along with 7500, which is another movie that still has no U.S. release date that got pulled. Played theatrical trailers in the movie theater, but they never released the movie. I watched 7500. I hated it, by the way. But I watched Christie tonight, and it is by far – I'm still off a high on that movie. It is one of the best horror films and one of the most beautiful and well-shot horror films that I've seen in a long-ass time. Very basic story. A girl is alone at a college during Thanksgiving, and she is terrorized by people. And it's a cat and mouse game in a huge college, and she's by herself, and it is fucking awesome. I hope that you guys don't download the movie, you motherfuckers, because I know that's the first place. That's why the IMDb rating's so goddamn high. Because I'm like, no, not everybody's buying this Blu-ray. It's region-free, so if you want to step out of your realm and buy a black Blu-ray case, because that's what it does, check out Christie. It's just, it's really, really fucking good. And cool. It's got a killer soundtrack. This movie feels like a throwback. But I just watched it tonight, and man, I'm just, like, it's by far going to be with me for a while. Like, I'm going to show a lot of people this movie. It's really, really good. So
very cool.
I'm hoping that gets some kind of U.S. You know, this is the thing, man, is that the Weinsteins are selling their fucking movies. And these Dimension picked up Livid, which came out in 2011. Still no U.S. release date. And, you know, it happened with 7500. It happened with Christie. Mockingbird eventually just got released. That was a Blumhouse movie. That movie was a couple years old. That was a follow-up from Brian Bertino's The Strangers. You know, I wanted to see what that motherfucker was doing next. And his movie was shelved for like 2 years, but Mockingbird eventually came. And Mockingbird is actually pretty good. I'm not as happy with it as much as The Strangers, because I think The Strangers is by far one of probably the better horror films in the past like 15 years.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know, it was kind of a, I mean, it was a follow-up. It was a found footage follow-up, and he is very predictable, but it's a lot of fun. Great acting, too. But anyways, I'm just doing a bunch of pick of the week
very
now.
Nice. All right, we got to move into these, the contest, man. We got to draw a name. We got to pick a winner. before I do that, I asked you guys to write in, basically give us a name of a movie that you saw for the first time without any kind of outside influence, like trailers or whatever you saw, kind of going in blind, and a movie that stuck with you. So I'm going to read these emails. We got, I got 9 of them to read. Some are longer than others. So
we're going to talk about movies.
We're going to go through this and then draw the winner. All right. So the first one comes from Geek Girl Geekgasm. It's two people run the website. I'm not sure. Is it a podcast? They have a YouTube page. Anyway, from Candace and Padfoot. But the email goes like this. I would have to say the film that I think never made it big, I think due to it being overshadowed by An American Werewolf in London, was The Company of Wolves, dubbed the Gothic Little Red Riding Hood. It's a British film from 1984. It had an amazing cast, David Warner,
Angela
Lansbury, Graham Crowden, Terrence Stamp, Jim Carter, blah, blah, blah. Directed by Neil Jordan, who also did an interview The Vampire and The Crying Game, which both also starred Stephen Ray. It is still, to this day, very unheard of and remains one of my top horror werewolf genre films ever, and most people who have seen it don't like it. I think it's a beautiful film and disappointed all these years later that it didn't get a more recognition. I was 11 when it was released, and my mom took me to the cinema to see it. Don't know why I have such a love and passion for it. It was truly an underrated film and forever one of my faves. It's also special to me as my mom took me to see it and now she's gone. I hold memories like that very close.
No, that's sweet. Yeah. I'm always a big pioneer of watching movies with your mother. I actually just wrote an article on Don't Go Into the Woods.
Cool.
Because that movie's awful, but I watched it with my mom. It was the very first time because my mom was always no talking. No noise, don't eat during movies, exactly. Even when I was younger. And Don't Go to the Woods was the very first movie she like was heckling. She was like making fun of it. And it was a totally different experience. So like that movie is actually really special to me, even though it's how bad it is.
Yeah.
It's just very special to me. But yeah, that's a sweet very little cool note.
Yeah. And I just watched that.
The Company of Wolves. I haven't watched it in years.
I just watched that the other night. It's on a region-free Blu-ray, and it looks like it's not going to get an American release anytime soon. But it was fairly cheap. I got it from Amazon UK, so it looks pretty good, man. I'm not. It's fine. So if you want to see that movie, definitely grab it from Amazon UK. All right. So the next email comes from Rob Rubinate. Hope I pronounced that last name right. He says, "I don't know if you call Funny Games the remake a horror movie, but I went into this blind."
Yeah, it is.
I think it is too. Went into this blind without knowing a thing about it a few years ago, and it still affects me to this day. It was so disturbing and frightening, but of course, I loved it. Great flick. So that was his pick. Funny
Games. Both Funny Games, cool, which is remade by the Michael Haneke.
He did both of them, right?
Yeah, he did both of them, and they're exact same movie. But yeah, right. No, I agree. I am a big fan of that movie. Cool. I actually prefer the remake over the original.
All right, next up, Samantha Elgi. In 1982, I was 7 years old, and for the first time, my parents let me decide what movie we were going to watch at the local theater. I have always enjoyed genre movies, so it was no surprise that after seeing the theatrical trailer for Poltergeist, I had to watch it. The trailer made the movie seem like a light family-oriented haunted house story, and since it had a main character roughly my age, I was in. My parents never objected because we saw E.T. the week before, and since Spielberg's name was all over the Poltergeist trailer and it was rated PG, what was there to be concerned with? Well, needless to say, after viewing a man rip his face off, a girl my age get abducted by spirits, a killer tree, and that damn clown, I was traumatized for weeks. The bright side is I never forgot it and have been a lifelong fan of the franchise. Every time there's a rainy Sunday afternoon, I am always compelled to rewatch it. So I have a similar experience with Gremlins. I begged my parents to take me to Gremlins because I thought it was
about a story about how you hid behind the seat, probably like a little babe.
That's forever burned in my brain, man. That's my relationship with Gremlins isn't necessarily the movie itself. It's the experience. That's awesome. By the way, Poltergeist 3 is going to be getting a Blu-ray release, FYI.
Oh, really?
It's going to be in a two-pack with Poltergeist 2 and 3, and it's also going to be a standalone release.
From who?
I don't know.
I think
the studio.
There's a region-free Poltergeist 3 Blu-ray already.
Okay. I think the studio is just plopping it out. Was it Paramount or? I don't know.
We're the brothers.
All right. Moving along. All right, here we go. Ron Kompestein says, Sean, Brad, Brian, and the Andrew Davis expert. So the film that comes to mind for me is actually a very recent film, Adam Green's Digging Up the Marrow. I've been a big fan of Green's since Hatchet came out in 2006. I've loved all his films, and I'm a huge fan of his show, Holliston. Anyway, so I've purposely avoided anything to do with marrow since I could go in fresh. And I have to say that this is the first horror film that scared me since I was a kid. There's a part in the film that is not a cheap jump scare, but will truly scare the crap out of you. This is a great film, and glad I went in knowing very little. Cheers.
Well, that makes you more interested. Good job. What's his name?
Ron.
Ron. Good job, Ron.
Thanks, Ron. All right.
I was mentioned on a local radio station today.
Oh, were you?
I didn't tell anybody. Well, what happened?
Brad's making it big.
Is that I was in the car, and I was at a light. And they were talking, the local like radio DJ or whatever from Orlando was talking, and he said that he posted this. It was a terrible joke. It was very insensitive. Like, I usually don't get offended, but he said they should have named, because Vin Diesel named his daughter Pauline after Paul Walker. He said that they should have named her like Fiery Burning Car.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so I tweeted to him. Wow. I was like, idiot, and he read my name on the and said I called him an idiot.
Nice. The fucking best. That's a bad joke. All right, next up here, we got a few more here. Michael Engber says, hey guys, love the show. My favorite experience in a theater was seeing the American remake of The Ring. I had heard a slight buzz, but really hadn't seen many videos, and man, did it scare the shit out of me. Thanks, Michael.
The scary flick.
Dude, it is. I saw The Ring was when I went to the I was living in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I went to the what was then regarded as the Black Theater, and it was an all black audience, and that was an experience.
Make this fucking racist statement again?
I did, dude. You got it. Like, I don't. And then,
the Black Theater.
Quote unquote. The theater
was called the Black Theater. Said Black Theater because it's in the black end of town.
No, I didn't say the black end of town. What I mean to say is, I saw it with a pretty much 98% black audience, and it was awesome. That's all I'm saying.
Oh my god, I love it so much.
Well, because here's the deal: like us white folk.
The black people don't say the white theater.
I don't know. All I know is...
Like, I literally thought the theater was called the Black Theater, and I was going to say that's such a good name for a theater.
Dude, you're missing the point here. Okay. I've never been in a theater where people were up yelling at the screen, and it was incredible. It was an incredible experience. A fight broke out mid-movie. And
how is that a great experience?
It was
terrifying.
Supremely entertaining. It was amazing. All right, moving along. You jerk. I don't mean
it. The worst part about the Ring remake is actually whenever you see Samara, because they totally fucking butchered that shit. If they would have used that original concept of what she really looked like when she was like coming out of the TV and shit, that movie would have been a lot scarier, just saying. Because the original, like, I still don't know how they did it. It's a fucking person coming out of a TV.
Yeah.
Like, it looks incredible. But anyways.
All right, moving along. Gosh, you always make me feel like second guess things I say, but I'm like, it's what happened, man. It's what happened.
The Black Theater?
I don't know. If you've ever been to Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know what I'm talking about. That's all I'm saying.
I live in a town that has some prominent, like, you know, areas that are where they are black. But I don't say the black end of town.
I didn't say the black end of town. I said it's what was known as at the time.
That's like, the black grocery store. Like, what is that?
We're a bunch of freaking white group of people. What, you know, I'm saying what was known as by my circle of friends at the time. God damn it.
You made me cry.
All right. So here we go. I don't mean anything negative at all.
I know you don't. That's the best part about it.
Jesus Christ. All right. Damien Pring says that, I first saw Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me during its theatrical release. I can't recall exactly why. Maybe I was put off by the frenzy. But I had not seen the popular show on television or video, so with the exception of watching the pilot episode the night before, I went in with only a primer and walked out a deep, deep fan, a bit changed by the experience. To this day, Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me ranks as one of my favorite films. It divided many fans at the time and still does. Now, having seen the entire series, I understand some of the grievances fans have with the picture, but I remain unchanged in my appreciation what may be Lynch's masterpiece. Like all great art, I always get something new out of it. Thank you.
Wow.
Firewalk with me.
The ballsy pick, man. I like it.
All right, we got three more here. Mike Stewart writes, Hey guys, my movie pick would have to be The Blair Witch Project. I'd only heard it was found footage and knew nothing else about it. It had freaked me out for weeks after seeing it, and it didn't help that I lived out in the country surrounded by the woods. A few days later, I also saw the mockumentary on TV, not realizing it was fake too. I remember briskly walking to my vehicle early one foggy morning, heading to work with the hair standing up on my neck because the thoughts of that damn witch popped up in my mind. Once I finally found out it wasn't real, it ruined it for me, but still, to this day, I enjoy watching it.
I just got goosebumps thinking about the movie because they used a viral marketing campaign when that movie very first came out.
Yeah.
And they promoted that as a real movie.
Yeah.
Like 100%. Like, I remember it being on the internet and I was just like extremely disturbed. Like if you went to a certain, just like the Blair Witch, project.com or whatever, they had little clips and they were saying it was real. And I remember it not being very well publicized at the time until MTV kind of stepped in. But that movie still creeps the fuck out of me, you know? And there's a good story behind that. The people that were in the movie had no idea what was going on.
Oh, really? Yeah, it was all the
were being scared.
Wow.
Like, the directors were actually out in the woods. Making the noises and cracking the branches and scaring the shit out of those people. And I mean, it wasn't until then, towards the end, of course, it's all acting, but for a good portion of that, that's real shit.
When they're in the woods, they totally use that fear. All right, we got two more. Christian Bates Hardy, longtime listener of the show. What's up, Christian? Back in about 2006, my friends and I were browsing the shelves at our local video store, and this movie in the foreign film section of the new release wall immediately caught our attention. It had a picture of a woman on the front cover holding what looked like a bandsaw covered in blood, and the title was High Tension. We rented it and watched it that night, and I was completely shocked by what I saw. Up to that point, I hadn't been exposed to the French New Wave of horror, and I was totally unprepared for what the movie was about to deliver in its first 30 minutes. He has some sort of spoilerish paragraph. Should I read or no?
Go ahead and read. High Tension's old, man.
Okay, that's here we go. All right. Spoilers to anyone who hasn't seen it.
This is a spoiler alert, people.
Spoiler alert.
Fast forward like 45 seconds.
But the brutal home invasion and murder of the family in the first 20 minutes shook me to my core. I had a hard time walking home alone that night without constantly looking over my shoulder. And for weeks, any time I saw a rusted out pickup truck like the one driven by the killer, quote unquote, of the film, I picked up the pace and walked as far away from it as I could. I know this probably sounds ridiculous if you know the twist of the film, but that opening scene just felt like a completely believable random act of violence, closer to the spirit of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, than any slasher I'd seen. High Tension didn't leave my mind until a few months after watching it, and I still haven't rewatched it. Even though the ending is total bullshit, High Tension still ranks as one of the scariest films I've ever seen, and I'll never forget how much it affected me for months afterwards.
I'm a fan of it.
I like it. I see the ending, man. The ending, I was like, ah.
I still like the ending. I know that's like the one thing that people hate about it, but I dug that ending, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, it wasn't predictable. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But,
that movie is
titled Switchblade Romance, by the way.
The original title?
Yeah, it was Switchblade Romance. Yeah. They retitled it High Tension for American release, but I caught a bootleg of that like a year before it came to theaters, and I fell in love with that movie.
Nice. That movie's fucking brutal.
Yeah.
So that turned me on to, I saw that and Martyrs
I get a boner.
I saw that and Martyrs in the same 2 days.
Yeah, it's a pretty ridiculous. Brutal movie.
All right, finally here, Derek Smith writes in, I went in blind for Starry Eyes, purposely.
Because I said so?
And absolutely had a blast with it, probably.
Did he say my name?
So. No, he doesn't.
Damn. I tell everybody to go in blind for Starry Eyes.
Love the story and the amazing performance by Alex Esso, and a great role for Pat Healy.
Fantastic, yes.
I'm totally a Taters girl.
Oh, God, yes, I am too.
Yeah, you know what? I was
fucking epic as fuck.
I was watching I turned on a Blu-ray, and then a trailer came on, and all of a sudden I realized it was Starry Eyes, and I went, oh, shit, and I turned it off.
They give away shit, man. Like, I understand, like, you need a poster, but the poster, the trailer, the back of the box art, it gives so much shit away.
All right.
Like, going to that movie blind is beautiful. Like, it's just, you have no idea what's happening.
One of these days, I really look forward to talking about that with, hopefully, Travis Stevens, maybe with Pat Healy?
We don't know. We're going to try to get the directors on. Actually, maybe. That's something that we are working on at the time. Yep. It will happen eventually. It just might be a while.
Yeah.
That's one of the interviews.
All right.
Dude, our listeners have some good taste, man.
They do, man. They do. I want to thank all of you who wrote in. I mean, more emails came in than I was even expecting. So thank you guys for participating. And I am stirring up the names in the hat as we can see. And I will...
I'm not in there.
I'm going to pull out a name. I'm going to pull out. I'm going
to
pull out. If you were here, I would let you pick. I'm pulling out.
No, I get to pick a movie that I went in blind with.
You want to pick a movie?
No, not now. Not if I'm going to be in. I get in the hat?
No. God damn it, Brad. Here we go. We're gonna pick a name here.
There.
Pick a winner, and then we've been talking way too long. People are sick of us by now. Here we go. Moment of truth. Picking out the winner right here in my hand. The winner is, holy shit, Christian Bates Hardy.
He already won stuff. Next one.
Has he won stuff?
No, I don't know. Jesus. I think we're the...
You son of a bitch. Did I pick this name randomly out of the hat? 100%. Christian, congratulations. You're the winner of the Screamcast mug and... Coffee Shop of Horrors Coffee. Boom.
Yay.
Applause.
I think he won the last giveaway when we did it.
Well, this was completely random, so shut up.
No, that name sounds familiar.
Well, he writes us all the time, man. He's an avid listener.
Does he hate me? Is that one of the guys that hate me?
I don't think he hates you, no.
He doesn't like me.
All right. We got to get going, man. It's been an epic show. We've talked for almost 2 hours.
You talk for like an hour and a half.
My dog has slept the entire time. Which
my
is
dog's
amazing.
Beside me.
You sound like you need to go to bed.
Dude, it's fucking... What time is it over here?
Dude, it's late, like, man. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning.
It's 1:15 here, man. It's Christ.
All right.
You keep me up. You can, right. Like, well, go masturbate and take a shower.
I can't.
Won't even be midnight.
I can't masturbate right now because I had a vasectomy. Which at the beginning of Here Comes the Devil was really, I was like, damn it. God damn it. I can't do anything right now.
It hurt if you get a boner?
Oh, my God. That beginning is sexy time. All right.
You know, it's funny about the Here Comes the Devil because that woman is like mildly attractive, but she gets more and more attractive as the movie goes through. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. All right. Anyways.
All right. We're going to divulge into boner total alert. Trash right now. I want to thank all of you for participating in the our little contest here. We'll be doing, hopefully, I believe we'll be doing one of these a month. Christian, thank you so much for participating. I'm going to pay out the ass for shipping to Canada, you son of a bitch. But well-earned.
I found out a Canadian secret. We'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about it. Okay, cool. All right. All of you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.